Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 29. Our guests are Empress333 and Echo Rose from Seven Cities Gaming. What can I say about these two incredibly skilled and talented women making sure that their name goes down in the history books for paving the way in esports? They've both done great work in developing the culture of esports at a high level. They've made a lot of opportunities happen for both players offline in the DC, Maryland, and Virginia area, as well as for international players abroad. This podcast dives deep into the process of building in esports. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Today, our guests are from Seven Cities Gaming, Empress333 and Echo Rose. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Trent. It's always a pleasure being on the show. We really appreciate being able to be here.
Thank you for having us again.
Prior, we kind of jumped into this and then we some audio issues, but we're into it again. And we were just saying that we haven't talked to each other since the round table. I was talking about how the round table, we put it on the back burner for a little bit, but we're working on bringing that back. And we may splice in the recording that we got from Empress and me before, but we'll see how it works out. Anyway, back to the first question that we asked was, how did you guys get into video games and how did you get into competitive video gaming?
For me, I've been into video games probably since I was 4 years old. And I was first introduced to video games through the Nintendo NES system, so the 1985 console, even though I got it many years afterwards. But that was my first introduction to video games, and I've loved it, you know, as an entertainment and literature medium since then. But really, I haven't got into video games as a profession, as a serious profession until the last 4 years. So we've been heavy into esports from a competitive side, from an esports consulting side, academic side for the last 4 years.
Man, for me, my dad was really into shooters when I was younger, which is, I guess, how I ended up as an FPS player. But he started me really young. And it was the only way he could make me pay attention. He would, like, here's a video game controller. Will you do your homework now?
Yes.
So I kind of use it as an escape to, like, focus, and it kind of just built from there. I had a computer probably by the time I was in high school, and I got into CSGO really intensely at that point. And I realized that you could be competitive in a video game, and I watched some of my favorite CSGO players make so much money, and I was like, I have to do it. I have to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So when did you guys first decide that you would create a team, Seven Cities?
I was finishing up my MBA, and MBAs can be painful. The case studies are painful. They're really painful. So to make it easier, case studies on video games were a lifesaver. But the more, you know, I was diving into that, the more that's all I wanted to do, or all I wanted to focus on. And then just having to do case study and comparison of the amount of money, the potential that is in esports, the blue market atmosphere that esports is, and then looking around at what's going on in esports, there's a lot of great things going on, but there's a lot of blunders as well, of, you know, just older generations trying to, you know, capitalize on the market, but not really being in to video games, and there being a disconnect there. I definitely saw an opportunity to help grow and to also, you know, make sure that it's done right. You know, that holds true to the gamer, and our experience from this, and not just from a business experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually ended up joining Vanessa about a year and a half into what was Seven Cities Gaming League. It was right as we opened our physical training dojo, and it kind of just happened naturally. I found a home with Seven Cities, and it was very easy for me to work with and share what I loved with Vanessa. So it ended up being a great partnership that we started a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now she's the COO, so that's my right hand there. But yeah, we trained kids, we trained adults, we formed teams that go out and compete, but we also act as a consultant for, you know, as a liaison for companies, corporations, for colleges and universities that are trying to get into esports and don't know how. We're there for them. So like for a William, as an example, he came back to town because he's from here and he decided to do like a music festival when there's a segment called More Than the Music. And we were tapped to show what Virginia has to offer. And we were like, we have esports to offer. So, you know, we were consultants for them and we put on an esports invitational competition. And we worked with other corporations as well, just to try to grow and show that it's more than just you know, kids playing. This is big money. This is the sport of the future, and we need people to pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And Seven Cities has multiple verticals, many verticals in the esports space. But what was the buildup before, you know, you guys had to go in a different direction with doing a physical venue space? What made you decide that that's what you guys wanted to do initially?
It was hard for us to corral kids. So one of the aspects that we were doing was we acted as like a summer camp, a training facility for youth to get exposed to esports and see it as an opportunity for both them and their parents, how to get them from playing a video game at home to they could get a scholarship to go to school. So we relied a lot on local universities to allow us to use their space, which was great. It's free, you know, it's great. And there's lots of opportunities for us to work together. But there were some shortcomings too. You know, the availability of time and spaces on the campuses and it being hard for people to get there and not being a consistent space. So we decided that we wanted our own space done up just for esports, thought of about video games from the ground up and the video game experience and a competitive experience as opposed to just trying to make it on the fly. At the time, it was great. We have not been able to stay open for COVID, so we shut down at the beginning of the epidemic, but we were looking at other opportunities once this clears and we could get over the hump of how we could reintroduce this in a safe way for everybody.
Yeah. So Echo, I know you guys have both been onto the round table before, but this is sort of a different audience. You're also in the collegiate scene. And so what was your decision making when you wanted to get involved in collegiate esports?
I honestly, Brian and Stratton was already a college that we had partnered with previously, and we had already thrown tournaments with them and helped run summer camp with them and use their facilities. So it was kind of an easy transition for me. The previous coach came to me and said, I need somebody that knows what they're doing for esports, and you are what I have, and I know that I can count on you as a captain. And so I waited a while. I wasn't sure that collegiate esports is what I wanted to do because I loved being a competitor, but what I love more is being a talent manager. I love working with my players and running the business side of things. So it took a while for me to say yes to him. It took about 3 or 4 months for me to be like, okay, I'm ready to commit to being a collegiate player. But I like the opportunity because it does really give you a lot more opportunity to grow your esports portfolio that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I got to go to a lot of events. I got to feel what it feels like to be a truly sponsored esports player. They sent me to Atlanta to compete in DreamHack in 4 different video games on top of that. And it was nice. I didn't pay for a thing. I said, I'm hungry. And somebody said, okay, let's go.
It was great. And we had a mansion. We rented a mansion in Atlanta. It was 3 stories for the whole team. We had like 20 people show. And it was a great experience. Yeah.
So it was a great feeling being part of a collegiate program. You have a team and you have a school back behind you that are trying to see you go as a varsity esports player.
Yeah. So just that's kind of an important point to make is like, what's the difference between, you know, joining an esports org that's collegiate or starting your own org instead of going to college and sort of building back from scratch?
There's pros and cons to both. You know, college is great. And like Echo was saying, you know, they could finance a lot of stuff for you just being a larger organization. But there's a lack of control as well. And it's not guaranteed wherever school that you're involved in knows exactly what they're doing. I'm not saying that there aren't some colleges and universities that are like nailing it right now. Some of them are, and they're doing a great job.
Yes.
Some aren't. And it's really bad. And and you don't know what you're going to be walking into all of the time. And they might not be making the right, team selections, and, you know, picking the right teams to try to field, have the right coaches that are going to grow you as a player. You know, they might cancel your team altogether. You know, we spent a lot of time developing an Overwatch team at Bryan and Stratton. And the next thing you know, next semester, there is no Overwatch.
Mm.
And then, you know, then what do you do now? You just signed up to go to school for 4 years. We're not competing in Overwatch now.
Yes.
So,
that actually literally just happened. I was an Overwatch player and they said, no more Overwatch.
There's no Overwatch now. And you just agreed to go to school there and you made a life decision. And then it could be, you know, and you're not going to have control as a student. So that is one negative to the collegiate side. The lack of control and management that you're going to have as a student. You're
just gonna have student, that was the biggest thing I had, because I am the CEO of Seven Cities Gaming League. And if I want to do something, I just go do it. I wanted to go to MAGFest literally last minute. And I was like, I'm going, bye. But I don't have the control that I at Bryan and Stratton. I have to wait for my coach to tell me that his boss said that, yes, we can go compete at this event. There's no – if I have to wake up at 9 a.m. to go to practice, even though those are not peak hours for me, it's time for me to get up and go to practice. That and there's a lot of they kind of just pick players and then they go, well, he's 18 and you're 19 and blah, 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 mush together. Go play together. I know you guys have never talked to each other ever in your lives.
You're 35. You're 35. He's
go play Overwatch together. Also, the 19-year-old is in charge of the 35-year-old.
Yeah. What could go wrong? It's going to be great. Those things happen, which makes, you know, being able to do it on your own very exciting. Yeah. You have full control. You can do what you want when you want. There's still a lot of money and opportunity available to you to do it on your own. However, all of the risk is on your own too. If you don't make the money, if you're not winning, you know, that's on you and your pockets, and nobody knows how deep those are. It depends on the person and the organization. So that could be a lot of pressure for you to succeed. And to do it right, where that pressure isn't really there as much with the school. If you did good, cool. If you didn't do good, whatever, you know, you're still taking your classes. Mm-hmm. But if it's up to you and, you know, whether or not you're going to be able to pay all your bills and pay, you know, buy your food based off of whether you win this tournament as a team, that's a lot of pressure. But it's still fulfilling and rewarding and worth it. And there's so much opportunity out there. There's so much space that you could still really make something out of yourself if you decided to go that way.
Yeah. And so talking a little bit about the financial backing, how are you funding Seven Cities Gaming? I know you're in a lot of different verticals, but have you been bootstrapping it? Or have you partnered? Have you done crowdfunding? How are you funding, Seven Cities Gaming?
Right. So we have a diverse portfolio. First and foremost, you know, we have skin in the game, and it's hard to get anybody else to sponsor, to be involved as an investor if you don't have your own money in the game. So anyone else that's interested in going that direction as well, you need to figure out how to have money in the game. Besides just a little bit of money, we took up our own money and own loans to invest in our company. But with that, and other people see that you're invested, we've been able to get other sponsors. We have multiples of them on our jerseys. So we we could raise money by selling space on our jerseys, space on our backpacks, space on our websites. People are able to sponsor our teams for specific events. Like maybe they're not paying, you know, sponsorship for the full year, but they can help sponsor our team being able to go to Evo or Evo Japan or DreamHack or CEO Show or whichever thing. We have some support from consultation. So that's not directly tied to us competing professionally as esports athletes, but we could be like, okay, well, Cox Communication is trying to show that they understand esports. They want to have an esports event. They don't know what esports are, but they're going to have an esports event. They could tap us, pay us to help them put on a performance. And that goes right back to our players and our, you know, our specific goals, what we're trying to accomplish. So there's a mix between a, you know, business transactions that we do in consulting space, sponsorship deals. We do have some investors that invest in specific things that we're doing, like holding a major or something like that. But so far, we've been able to maintain control over the company. We haven't sold any percentage of our company to date yet, which is great. It's a hard thing to do as well. not lose any percentage of your company as you're raising funds. We've been able to do that. Different verticals, like you said, which is important because you can't depend on just one. So it's important that we have multiple sources coming through. We are looking to, like, with this next few months coming up, especially with COVID, we're probably going to be doing a seed funding round again, and we probably will be looking for investors for a portion of our company.
Awesome. What's it been like with Seven Cities Gaming? Given there aren't physical events, how are you managing tournament, getting involved in tournaments and entering new tournaments?
It's so hard right now.
It's so difficult right now. I mean, not only is the games are different for our players, so our players are basically changing their play styles, especially our players. We have all of our players are mixed up players. So they're changing their complete play styles to try to play online. But there's also not as many events, and we have a lot of Smash players, and Smash just said no more. So we have a lot of players that are in transition. It's been very difficult to translate to online.
Yeah.
Events were kind of our thing. That was what we did.
It's been a tumultuous year and some change. And like she said, you know, we did have a full Smash team besides Nintendo not really supporting Smash events. You know, major tournaments that would have a Smash tournament, you know, being canceled for the year, maybe next year, this year coming up as well. Collegiate esports dropping Smash. Some of our players have been having a hard time adapting. Some of them, you know, have other skill sets as well in video games and are migrating to other places, but it's been hard. You know, there's a lot of people that are trying to adapt to COVID world. You know, Bandai Namco tried really hard to up their online capabilities because Tekken, for the most part, is just completely unfunctional online. If we weren't going to an offline event, there is no Tekken. And we have a lot of Tekken players, not just in the United States, but, you know, worldwide as well. And not being able to travel, we can't practice with each other. It's been hard. It is a little bit better. We can now play with each other across countries, which we haven't been able to until recently. That's great, but it's still been difficult. And there's a lot of people that we wanted to give a platform to and have their debut into the esports world that we haven't been able to accomplish. Hopefully we can in this next year. There's a really great Dragon Ball Z player we were hoping to bring in from Pakistan. He was going to do his debut at, which one was it? It's the one in Chicago, Echo?
CEO Show?
No, that's in Florida.
Not CEO. Combo Breaker.
He was going to have his debut at Combo Breaker. He's like the number one Dragon Ball player online. And we are going to get him from Pakistan to here, to United States to show out. And the travel restrictions, the Muslim ban, we couldn't get visas. There's all kinds of blocks now. And then, you know, there's just no tournaments. I don't even think Tekken World Tour is up for 2021. So we still... not only can't throw our own tournaments, but, you know, our professional players don't have anything to look forward to. And not only is it, you know, hard financially, but like emotionally, it's a strain for a lot of our players because this is their life. And all of a sudden, your life is canceled for a few years. And there's no sign of when it's going to get better. It's been rough.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, there's some events on the books that you can look at upcoming, but it's still speculative whether it's safe or not to attend those events for a while. I know there's some small community events coming up soon, but still very, very, just a nerve wracking kind of situation where you just don't know what's what. Mm-mm. So when you're normally getting into tournaments, what sort of, how are you balancing your investments into entry fees to what the prize pools are, that can be won?
When we're hosting or when we're going, when we're going, it depends on the player. So we have like a range of sponsorships for our players. Some players mm-hmm. are younger and, you know, we didn't fully invest in them. Let's say maybe we paid for their travel or we paid mm-hmm. for one or two elements, but we didn't pay for everything. So yeah. What we would expect back from them is a lot less. Then we have full-fledged, fully sponsored players that we're either hosting year round. And we paid for them to get there, their entry fees and all that kind of stuff. So when they do take home a win, we take, you know, there's a split that comes back to the company. So like, let's say you came in first place, we might take 50%, but we also paid for everything for you and your tickets and your hotel and probably your living for a good period of the year. But then there's other people that just represent Seven Cities. They paid their own ticket in and they, you know, what they win is on their own, but they're just representing their brand and, you know, and we appreciate just that. But once they, you know, have shown themselves, they place top eight or something like that, we will extend a full sponsorship deal where they might get a stipend throughout the year, plus, you know, all of their stuff paid for tournaments.
Yeah. What do you look for when you're signing a player? Are you looking for the best player or are you looking for a player to grow the brand?
Echo will tell you both, for sure. She's definitely like hands-on with the management. I might be there for like the selection process in the beginning, but once we pick a player, Echo's normally the one that's hands-on with, you know, managing the player. But they have to be good at their game, but they also have to have some type of personality. We've definitely met players that they're really great at their game and they have a personality of a board, and there's just not a lot we could do with that.
it does make them a hard sell, and I'm very, very hands-on with our players. How they look online and what they're posting and everything, honestly. All of their tweets come straight to my phone. As soon as they post something, I read it, but I will yell at them to take it down otherwise. Mm-hmm. I want to know that, like, the person that we're picking can represent who we are as a company and what our mission is as a company, and also will represent our sponsors well. Because our sponsors are looking at us and they're like, "What, this person did this? Well, I can't have that on me."
Yeah, besides cancel culture, which is a thing by itself, brand representation and maintaining the integrity of our sponsors that are helping to support these players going to places. Anytime we send them somewhere and they're representing a company on their chest or on our back or on our shoulders or whatever, their actions, what they say, do, who they're associated with, all of that comes into play that a lot of people forget to think about. They might just be talking smack to like somebody and they think it's funny, but if that ends up into an altercation and you're wearing a brand on your chest, that speaks badly about the company and all of the sponsors involved. So we definitely want to make sure that there's somebody that knows how to handle themselves professionally at events, you know, both on and off camera, and knows how to maintain themselves online and they don't get themselves in trouble. We did have to let players go before by them just not being able to maintain their personal lives outside of the game. And that's sad to see.
Yeah, on the other side of the coin for operating, how are you working with publishers to license and be able to host tournaments?
Some of them are easy, some of them are, you know, not so easy, and then some are just in gray areas right now. Like, we used to have regular Smash events. I don't know how to go about Smash events right now.
I'm too terrified to throw a Smash event. I have 25 Smash players literally just waiting for me to tell them what to do, but I'm too scared that Nintendo is going to come down on us in some way. And it doesn't matter what you say. I mean, it's too much of a weird gray area for it to be worth it.
Yeah, that was something that we did regularly. We had monthlies. Some of our largest competitions were Smash events. We gave, you know, pretty regularly almost $1,000 for first place on a regular basis for Smash. But Nintendo taking such a hard stance against esports, we don't know the best way to approach it right now. We're waiting to see what other people are doing as well. What happens, how Nintendo reacts to other people after, you know, they've taken down some community events. So certain games we're avoiding altogether. Games that we know publishers are pretty friendly about, you know, like Bandai Namco is pretty friendly. They'll let you host their individual events as long as you're not breaking any community rules. And if you do well, they'll start providing some of the pot prizes. So companies like that, they're very easy to work with. If you need to do something with Riot Games, all you have to do is, you know, email someone, let them know that you're trying to do it. They'll let you run them. And if, like I said, you did good and you've been advertising it online and they could see that, they often offer prizes as well so that you could get even more people, to your events. So some people are easy, some people, you know, a little bit more challenging, and then some people were just scared to touch.
Nothing, I would never, Nintendo.
I don't know what's going on with Nintendo lately. I'm not going to try them.
Yeah, not nice to receive a subpoena to cease and desist. No. At all. That's not a lawsuit you want to fight against the big boys.
I ain't fighting Nintendo. Nope.
So what is, like, I mean, Smash is a little bit of a challenge, but for something like the Overwatch League or for CDL or even CSGO, what is the path to pro? And I know it's different, you know, for someone in here in Texas, but what's it like in Virginia? What's the path to pro in Virginia?
So some locations in the country have a strategic advantage, you know, location-wise for being able to have a professionally franchised team. One of those things is having an already franchised sports team of any kind, a football team, a basketball team, baseball team. Someone in sports, even if they don't understand esports, could see the value in a team, which could help early funding, early adaptation to esports. Also, you know, being somewhere near a publisher, near software developers like, you know, California, you know, just the West Coast in general, you have strategic advantages. One of our serious challenges in Virginia is missing a lot of those key elements. We don't have major publishers here. We don't have a major tech hub in Virginia. We don't have a pro sports team in Virginia. So, like, you know, as an example, Philadelphia Knights, they were just a small group of gamers in Philadelphia, but they were able to pull on the Steelers, and the Steelers helped them pay for franchise fees and become an actually recognized franchise esports team. We do have some of those hurdles here in Virginia, but me and Echo have been working really hard to try to overcome some of those things. Number one, looking at individual successful people that come out of Virginia Beach and Virginia in general that might be interested in investing in something like this for their home state, for their hometown. We have semi-pro teams we're going to look at that might, you know, see that connection between sports and esports and understand the gravity, the amount of money that's involved. It's not just kids playing, you know, joking around. There's money to be made, and we need to look at this professionally. But those things are challenging. There's also more complications depending on what games we're talking about. you know, unlike football or basketball, you know, it's just football. It's just basketball. An esports team, I mean, most esports teams have multiple teams in different fields. They might have a CSGO team, a League of Legends team, an Overwatch team. You know, they have players in this and that and that. And each game has their own regulations and prices to get into the actual league and different pathways. Which Echo, as a first-person shooter player, she can speak a lot more on the pathways to Overwatch through CSGO, through PUBG, that we've been looking at.
So it kind of just depends on what your starting point was. I actually have found that trying to go into the collegiate way, thank goodness we're in Virginia, and Virginia just opened the Virginia High School League. So Seven Cities has direct ties to Virginia High School League, so we're looking at their players. So for you to start somewhere like that and then to try to come on to a bigger company like Seven Cities or to go collegiately would be the best place for you to start, because people are looking for you to have a baseline of an esports portfolio. Mm-hmm. Saying that I ranked master's level in whatever game it is, it doesn't really show anybody anything. So they're looking for you to have competitive experience, and being part of the Virginia High School League or something like that would help you. Something else you could do is try to just show off at a tournament. I mean, go in with your friends and win big, win top three. It's time to show out. I find that going pro in FPS is one of the hardest things to do. There are so many different video games now. And ever since the pandemic, I mean, now more than ever, everyone plays video games. My siblings, who I've never seen play a video game in my life, they're all pro the gamer. They're streamers now. All three of them.
They're not just playing, they're streaming?
No, all three of them. Wow. My sister didn't even know what Twitch was a year ago. And now she has like 1,000 followers.
Wow.
She's an affiliate in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it's just growing your platform and growing your brand. I find that brand and having a basis for a group of people that are supporting you, or I don't want to call them fans. I don't like calling them fans. Having a base community to support you will help grow you. And it'll help you look like you are a player to pick.
Yeah. They have a following, basically. Mm-hmm. Like as a company, like looking at it as a business person, if we're looking at someone that we want to pull on, you know, them having a reach is something that we look at. What their social media profile is looking like. Do they have a certain amount of numbers on this? Do they have experience working on a team?
Like, for example, mm-hmm. I signed Black Yoshi. I know he's not an FPS player, but I signed Black Yoshi. He's a Smash player. Black Yoshi, I'm no shade on my player. I love him. He doesn't win. He plays as well. He doesn't win. But he has a great following. He has a massive group of supporters. His following across social media is worth his full sponsorship.
Yeah. Or maybe someone else might not be.
Yes. Whereas I'm looking for that person to win.
Yeah. And then it's even more complicated when we're talking about team sports. Yoshi plays an individual sport. When we look at putting teams together for PUBG or for League of Legends, the dynamics to, number one, be good enough to get out of amateur brackets and to start being looked at is a lot of work. Also, you know, esports is still a little bit of wild, wild west going on. So there's a lot of treachery. There's some backstabbing. There's some, like, even the really good teams, they might go through roster changes like 6, 7, 8 times.
Shanghai.
Yeah. They might go through a bunch of different times before they have a team that's going to make it where it needs to be. There's going to be a lot of shakeups. There's going to be people that try to leave and take players with them. It's a lot. It's important to understand contract law. You know, from a business, you need to understand contract law to make sure that you maintain a team. As a player looking to join a team, you need to understand the contract that you're getting into, what exactly you're signing on to, what it means.
I think that a lot of people get too big for their britches. Every time I've had a really good FPS player, they've been like, as soon as they have a tiny bit of ego, they're like, oh, I could do this by myself. Why do I need you?
Yeah.
6 months later, you have now failed.
Yeah.
You should have just sat down and waited.
And understand. Yeah. Like,
and understand. I every time I like FPS teams specifically, they really want to think that they could do it by themselves. And they don't understand the value of having a backing. It is really important to have an established company behind you.
Yeah. Like, besides being good at the game, like the gamers need to be good at their game and that's your role, but you still need someone handling business and marketing and all the other aspects that is going to make the team successful, because being good isn't enough. It's not enough.
It's not enough. Also, you need to be cohesive and be a team player, because those are flags that we see as sponsors all the time.
Oh God!
For players that want to join the if I see toxicity, if I see that you're trying to become captain before I elect a captain, stuff like that flags to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I worry about your cohesiveness later in the, as a person who wants to back you.
Yeah. Hmm. You know, it's interesting because I think this is going to become a more regular conversation, given that, you know, I grew up playing traditional sports. I know how a sports team operates. I've dealt with coaches. A lot of gamers, they don't have any sports experience, so they can't relate what you're offering them to anything else. I mean, I'll buy it if they had a mentor or a really good teacher, but I don't think, you know, it is vastly different for someone who's never participated in sports before.
I think some of it comes from they're by themselves. So they're the best by themselves in whatever rank they're in. And so they're by themselves and they're like, it's just about me. And you can see it in their play style. They solo play, they don't play as a team. And it's just breaking the training at that point.
It is, but I would like to see, I have seen over this amount of time that really good esports players often lack team dynamics, team education. They don't understand how to work as a group, and that does affect their play, because it doesn't matter how good you are by yourself if you can't, you know, pull together as a team, especially if we're going against a really good team. One person, no matter how great you are, isn't going to carry the rest of the team as much as they think they can. When we're playing a good team, one person isn't going to carry it. It's not. And there, I wish I would see more people that were really dedicated to esports having a traditional sports background, or having a some type of community experience or team experience one way or the other, because I definitely see that as a continuous problem, like that pops up quite regularly.
The way that my coach said it is that the players that are playing like that, they're playing like they're still in ranked. You're not in ranked anymore. You're on a team now.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to break whatever bad habit got you to Masters.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I think you said it earlier that esports is wild, wild west, but it's also in its infancy in the sense of its current form. It's, you know, a decade or younger. In the development cycle. So, I mean, we're all here so early. So we're going to expect some of these mishaps to happen. You know, one of the big ones I think that gets displayed a lot is that there's a lack of respect for the coaches, because the coaches are often the same age as the players, you know, where you don't necessarily see that in traditional sports.
Oh yeah. That's a huge problem. We've seen that in summer camps too. And, you know, and different educational things. We'll have some real, real tiny kid that refuses to take direction from anybody because they're 13 and they know they're the best at this game and nobody could tell them nothing. And unfortunately, that's not how it works. And it's a hindrance and it gets in the way. We had one Overwatch kid. He was phenomenal. I would go as far to maybe say he's a prodigy at Overwatch. You know, our adult coach was trying to put him on the adult team, and we were like, slowly roll, buddy, he's still 14. But when it came time to putting him on a team and playing with the rest of them, no matter how good he was, he was the ego, the uncoachability that was there. He didn't respect the players that were older than him, that maybe weren't as good as him. So even though he was great, he was a prodigy at this game, it boiled down to him not being that useful because he could not perform with the team. He couldn't, even though he was great. He could knock all of us out individually, for sure. Mm-hmm. But he can't play on a team. It's good.
Gotcha. And so as we wrap it up here, what are some of the things that Seven Cities Gaming is trying to accomplish in 2021?
2021, we would like to gain a franchise seat on a league. That is our goal for the year. We want the spot.
We want the spot.
And is that a franchise league spot in the contenders or what's the other
contenders?
Challengers, league, or where are you looking to get in as far as a franchise spot? Because I know that you know that's $25 million for a CDL or
We're focusing on CDL first, so we're going to go Call of Duty first. They have an amateur league that I would really like to see our boys get into, so it's just a matter of growing them to make sure that they can fight when it's time to fight.
And that's Challengers League, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is still quite expensive, but compared to Overwatch.
Compared to OWL, though.
Or, yeah, some of the other ones that we're talking about, multi-millions of dollars. We have been talking with, you know, different sports boards and tourism boards in the state and trying to let them understand that, hey, this is, you need a sports team. You missed the boat with football. You missed the boat with basketball. You're not going to get it. And if you wait too long, you're going to miss it with these sports too. So we've been trying to, you know, ring that bell and hopefully, you know, get a larger backer for some of the other leagues. But for some of the relatively smaller entry fee leagues, we're looking at to do on our own with or without the sponsorship of the state.
Something you mentioned a little bit earlier that you might be interested in courting some investors. What sort of equity stake are you looking to offer to investors?
We're looking at 20% right now. We want to give away the company. Yeah, trying to fundraise for this goal, especially with COVID. It's not like we're going to be able to do a lot of moving and shaking tournament-wise or having our own major. So with it being relatively quiet in the esports space, this could be a good time for us to you know, in the background, be securing a seat on a franchise and come out stronger 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the challenges, I know this came up in a clubhouse room the other night, and it was sort of a bold statement that esports at this time is, you know, being driven by venture capitalist investment, and that, you know, it's being driven by speculation based on what the future value of esports will become. And so right now a lot of esports companies have, you know, gone underwater. So some of these larger visions like that you have and how you're able to stay afloat are very impactful towards, you know, people wanting to stay afloat in esports and keep their brand, you know, recognition and keep going.
It is. I want everybody to maintain faith, but what you said is 100% correct. Unlike other avenues or other industries that you could be in that has, you know, there's already some backbone there. You know, bankers know how to approach it. You know, more traditional investors know how to approach it. Most of the time when me and Echo are talking to different investors, they've never heard of esports. We have to spend the majority of our time educating them about esports first before we can even talk business. So because of that, the people that are investing, speculators, venture capitalists, and that makes it a little bit more volatile. But we're hoping as the industry continues to grow, people are taking it more seriously. Colleges are adapting. There's more and more franchise esports teams happening all across the country and the world. It hasn't really slowed down. We have lost some along the way, but I think in general, we're showing that esports has a future. We're showing that there's money to be made for investors. And with that, I think we'll get more of the traditional investors and the endemic and non-endemic brands to get on board with us. Some of the brands that are supporting it, you know, just obviously fit in with esports. It's been harder to get some of the non-traditional brands involved. But once they see the money and we could show them that, you know, there's a pathway this way. There's gamers here. Our gamers that watch and play games, they have money. You want this space. I think more people will adapt.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, another thing that I think about a lot is that esports right now, from the developer's point of view, is very much to sell the games that are being played. It's not the emphasis is not based on the revenue that is driven by the tournaments and what's going on. And so right now, esports doesn't have the validation factor to be anything to the developers other than a tax write-off. And at this point in time, given the pandemic, that's almost not even a thing. Like, yeah. How are they going to spend money? It is obviously, you know, internationally it's different, but in the US it's how are they going to tell the IRS that they spent money on a physical event when there is no physical events?
It's hard. Like, you know, even me and Echo, like, we really enjoy watching Overwatch. We just watched the Overwatch League force their Overwatch teams develop arenas, you know, $50 million more arena, mm-hmm. and then, oh, you can't have any events for a year or two. It's COVID has been a very financially impactful thing for esports, and a lot of people have been hurt. But I feel and I believe that we're going to be able to survive and weather the storm and still come out on the other side and continue. And, you know, it is true that a lot of developers are short-sighting the impact of esports, but some mm-hmm. of them aren't. Some of them aren't. like Riot, as one small example, they understand both elements, getting people mm-hmm. to play the game, selling things in the game, but they also see how powerful their following is with in-person events and investing in those events. And, mm-hmm. and it's only shown them how much more growth there is, how many more people want to play your game when you have the esports element, when you have the in-person event with it. They've mm-hmm. definitely been a company that I hope other companies, other developers take notes from and learn how to do it correctly. Bandai Namco.
Wow.
Take notes.
I do agree that Riot's definitely doing it correctly. I actually wasn't even a big Riot fan until Valorant came out, obviously, FPS nerd.
Yeah.
But they do a really good job at selling their story and selling their game and making people want to be interested in it. When I write pitch decks to sell esports, I put in League of Legends stuff. That's what I put in. I'm look at this World Laser Service. Look at this mm-hmm. giant thing that they did. Look at this music video they produced for characters inside their game. And these are some of the most famous K-pop stars now in the world.
They do videos for the game. They have mm-hmm. you know, music groups around the game. They have the largest esports events in the world. They're really the trendsetter, the leader in esports. Because they understand the impact of the in-person thing that some other companies, they've looked at it as a side note, not understanding that is how you sell their game. You get people to these events, they will buy your game. Not only will they buy your game, they are fully dedicated yeah.
Well, time flies and, you know, when we're having fun, but how can people get involved and contact Seven Cities Gaming, whether they're in the Virginia area or if they're an international player, business person, entrepreneur, how can they get in contact with you? Sponsor.
Oh, yeah. Well, our website, sevencitiesgamingleague.com. You can check us out there, follow us, get involved with the Discord, and get on the mailing list. But if you're a player, we don't care where you are. You could be anywhere in the world. We want to see you. We want to see what you could do and see if we could help, you know, provide a platform for you. So if you hit us up on our email, sevencitiesgamingleague@gmail.com, myself or Echo will reach out to you and see what you have to offer. And we look forward to the possibility of taking on new players.
You guys can also hit us up on Facebook. We respond back almost immediately. It's facebook.com/7citiesgl.
Awesome. Thank you, Empress and Echo Rose of Seven Cities Gaming League.
Thank you for having us again.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've been listening to the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you once again. Hey y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPO
RTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.evn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.